Billion Dollar Brain by Len Deighton. Behind me, I heard a slow-moving car. It was a large Zis, a car used only by government officials. The driver flashed the lights and the car drew alongside. The door opened, blocking my forward movement. From the back seat, the voice of the colonel I'd seen in the subway said, "Won't you get in, English?" I got into the rear seat and the colonel closed the door. There was a lot of cigar smoke. "So, we meet again, Colonel Stark," I said, like they say it in films.
"Oleg."
"So, we meet again, Oleg."
"Yes."
He gave an order to the driver who switched off the car motor.
"You are enjoying car Russian winter?"
Stark stared at me. His head looked like that of a statue that someone had found and rolled home so that all the delicate parts had broken off.
"Yes," I said, "I'm enjoying the Russian winter. Are you?"
Stock tugged at his fleshy chin.
"We have a saying in my country. For him who stands at the top of the tower, there is no other season but winter."
"Yes," I said, although I still don't understand what that proverb means.
"You are involving yourself with a particularly foolish and headstrong group of troublemakers. I think they are exploiting you. When I move against them, do not expect me to treat you differently from the way I treat them. It may be that you are investigating these evil people on behalf of your government, or it may be that you are ordered to cooperate with them. They are troublemakers, English, but they will find that I am more expert at making trouble than they are."
The Book of Ultimate Truths by Robert Rankin. Cornelius turned his key in the lock and quietly entered the ancestral home. He'd not been altogether honest with the parents regarding the job situation and considered it prudent to steal silently away to his room rather than construct explanations for his early return from work. As he made to sneak up the corridor to the stairs, the sounds of heated debate reached his ears, issuing from the front parlour. Cornelius knelt and pressed an ear to the keyhole of the closed door.
"And I still say the boy should be told," came the voice of the daddy.
"And I say he shouldn't," came the voice of the ecologically sound mama.
"But the rare mutant strain in his makeup could save the world.
A pension plan and prospects is all he needs."
"You're missing the point, woman."
"Don't call me woman. You're the one wearing the wig."
"It's not a wig. It's a hair enhancement accessory. And those aren't your own bosoms, by the way."
"My bosoms play no part in this discussion."
"Nor does my bald spot."
"Your bald spot is indicative."
"Of what?"
"Of your bald outlook on life."
"And who made it bald? You with the socks stuffed up your front?"
"They're matronly. They project a warm and caring image. The boy needs that, and he needs a haircut also."
"He can't cut his hair. It's big hair. Famous people always have big hair."
"You don't."
"I'm not famous."
"I should never have married you. My mother was right."
"You never had a mother."
"Of course I had a mother. She was a pillar of the community."
"She was a figment of your imagination. You never had a mother. I never had a mother. You know that."
"But what about the boy?"
"He should be told."
"We can't tell him. We took the oath. He must never be told. He'll find out for himself when the time is right."
"The stuff of epics," said the daddy.
"About that."
Cornelius swung open the parlour door without knocking and strode into the room. The Princess Bride by William Goldman. Inigo did what he always did before a duel. He took the great sword from its scabbard and touched the side of the blade to his face 2 times, once along one scar, once along the other. Then he examined the man in black. A fine sailor, yes. A mighty climber, no question. Courageous without a doubt. But could he fence? Really fence? Please, Inigo thought, it's been so long since I've been tested. Let this man test me. Let him be a glorious swordsman. Let him be both quick and fast, smart and strong. Give him a matchless mind for tactics, a background the equal of mine. Please, please, it's been so long. Let him be a master. "I have my breath back now," the man in black said from the rock. "Thank you for allowing me my rest." "We'd better get on with it then," Inigo replied. The man in black stood. "You seem a decent fellow," Inigo said. "I hate to kill you."
"You seem a decent fellow," answered the man in black. "I hate to die." But one of us must, Inigo said. Begin! And so saying, he took the six-fingered sword and put it into his left hand. He'd begun all his duels left-handed lately. It was good practice for him. And although he was the only living wizard in the world with his regular hand, the right, still he was more than worthy with his left. Perhaps 30 men alive were his equal when he used his left. Perhaps as many as 50. Perhaps as few as 10. The man in black was also left-handed, and that warmed Inigo. It made things fairer. His weakness against the other man's strength. All to the good.